In an interview with David Barsamian, you identified three main cracks or fissures in today's American empire: Latin America, the Arab East, and Afghanistan. I want to begin with the Middle East, which you characterized by the dual occupations of Iraq and Palestine. Can you explain how these occupations caused the Middle East to become a chink in American armor?
Well, the policies pursued by the United States in both parts you refer to have ended in total disaster. The Oslo Accords are no longer accepted by the Palestinian people. They've elected a government which is not accepted by the United States and Israel. So you have a permanent crisis embedded and inbuilt into the situation. Iraq now, even US and British officials heavily involved in the war in Iraq admit it's a big disaster. They don't know what to do. And this is now coming not only from political people, but from the army. As I pointed out in my talk, the head of the British Army recently said that the occupation in Iraq is untenable. They've killed over 500,000 people. Still, they can't bring the country under control. The majority of Iraqis want an end to the occupation. The country is in a complete mess, socially, economically, politically. So, of course, it's a big, big disaster for the United States, which was hoping to make Iraq into a model Middle Eastern democratic state. And it's blown back into their faces very severely.
Now, you predicted the destabilizing effects that the war in Iraq and the subsequent outrage of the Arab people would have on these compliant regimes throughout the Middle East. Can you talk about those effects at the present time and what it will mean for future American excursions that rely so heavily on collaborators?
Well, I think these regimes, the Egyptians, the Saudi Arabians, the Gulf states, are very heavily dependent on the United States because that is their main support. The Egyptians get that support financially and the Saudi Arabians get it militarily. And the U.S. spending on defense and the military bases in the Middle East reaches billions of dollars each year. And the reason for that is they want these regimes to protect the oil for them. So they're doing it, and they've been doing it for years. But these regimes are hated and extremely unpopular in their own countries. And the only way they can last, essentially, is through repression. But the collapse of the American project in Iraq, the defeat and setback suffered by the Israeli-American operation in Lebanon, the inability to settle the Palestinian issue, means that the regimes which support the United States are also getting weaker and weaker. All these governments had more or less given the green light for the invasion of Lebanon and the crushing of Hezbollah. When that didn't work, they suffered. And the Jordanians in particular had said that they wanted Hezbollah destroyed. That hasn't happened.
We know why the occupation in Iraq and Palestine constitute fissures in the empire, because of the extreme bitterness and indignation within the region and within the West towards the war. Afghanistan, though, some think began as and still is a just war. What's your response to those who say that it neither creates the same bitterness at home nor in Afghanistan, and justifiably so?
Well, it was never a just war. It was always a war of revenge. And wars of revenge are never just. It's to show your own people we can take out this country. And they changed the government, but they didn't even achieve their objectives. And now they're trying to deal and negotiate with the Taliban itself. So when you decide, when the people of a country decide that an occupation is no longer acceptable and begin to resist, then you start killing them. And when you start killing them, the resistance grows, it doesn't decrease. So what is going on in Afghanistan today is that it is a country occupied by NATO. It's a NATO occupation. And it's become plainly obvious that the people of that country don't want to be occupied. So sooner or later, the NATO forces will have to get out, because unlike, as is the case in the Middle East, where there's oil, in Afghanistan, there's not that inducement. So many people in the countries from where the troops are beginning to ask, what the hell are we doing there anyway? You know, it's none of our business. What is? So I think this is going to create a dual pressure on the NATO countries to withdraw their forces. And also, casualties are increasing. I mean, in the first year or two, there were very few NATO casualties. These have now gone up a great deal.
Now, you mentioned these negotiations with the Taliban, and the NDP here in Canada was ridiculed for its stance in calling for these negotiations. And a few weeks later, our Chief of Armed Forces, Rick Hillier, came out speaking of the importance of these very negotiations and the fact that not all Taliban are bad. And can you speak to this incorporation of the Taliban that in fact you predicted?
Well, no, I think basically what they're doing is negotiating with the section of the Taliban which is very close to Pakistani military intelligence. But they had denounced the whole of the Taliban as being unacceptable, as being complete, the worst, the most evil people who live on the globe were the Taliban. And now they're negotiating with the section of it to try and incorporate them in the government so they can save the occupation. It's not going to work. Because Karzai, the puppet leader they've imposed on Afghanistan, is just unacceptable. And the elections were a complete joke, as even some of the serious conservative journalists covering them, when they reported back in the British press, certainly they said these elections were a total joke.
In his book, Orientalism, Edward Said said that Orientalism was ultimately a political vision of reality, whose structure promoted the difference between the familiar, the Western, the us, and the strange, the East, and the them. Is Orientalism as a political vision still relevant to the way the West understands the East?
Certainly it's relevant, and you can see it every single day in the way in which some things are reported and not reported in the Western media. I mean, I don't think it's a big secret that the demonization of the Muslims, which is taking place, is part and parcel of that. You're only allowed to see one picture, whereas in fact the Islamic world is very large and very diverse. The way in which the East is viewed today, especially the Islamic East by the West, it's a worse degeneration than the thing Edward Said described, because the big image now of the East is of Islam. The image of Islam which most people will give you is big guys with beards blowing themselves up or killing us. That's the image. And it completely ignores the reality of the Islamic world. You know, Islam stretches from China to Senegal in Africa. And it's a very, very wide religion. There are different traditions and currents within it. And within this big world, the Islamic extremists, as they are called, occupy a very tiny space. But they are the ones constantly projected. So you don't get a vision of what that whole world is like. And that is an extreme form of political orientalism.
Now, in Latin America, what you call or identify as the empire's biggest fissure, it seems clear that Venezuela, Cuba, and Bolivia, through ALBA, have created this growing regionalist bloc against U.S. and IMF regional interests. However, when we see, for example, Chavez's reception at the UN and the connections the three countries are making abroad, can the challenge they pose in the Caribbean and Latin America and the front they're building go beyond the Western Hemisphere?
I think it can. Chavez is extremely popular in the Middle East. In my new book, Pirates of the Caribbean, Axis of Hope, I talk about his popularity in the Middle East. For instance, Al Jazeera interviewed him for an hour. And when this program was shown, it was watched by 36 million people. And the Al Jazeera people told me that they'd got the largest responses from that ever in their history. Thousands and thousands of emails. And the bulk of the people were asking, why can't the Arab world produce a Chavez? So the impact of that is being felt in the Arab world. And it's very interesting to me that when Nasrullah speaks at a big rally and salutes people all over the world, he salutes Hamas, and then he salutes our brother Chavez in Venezuela. So they know that the struggle takes place on many fronts.
And last question, you are coming out with this new book. And it's called Pirates of the Caribbean, Axis of Hope. Maybe you could help us understand what it's about and what you mean by Axis of Hope.
Well, the Axis of Hope is that we've, since the development of the Washington Consensus, which put the whole world into a neoliberal sleep, suddenly you had developments in Latin America which woke that world up again and reignited hope, because people were beginning to despair. And I think from the point of view of hope, the Latin American continent is the most important. And Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, Evo Morales in Bolivia, and some of the achievements of the Cuban Revolution, many different parts of the world where different forms of struggles are taking place, and the most advanced, in my opinion, is Latin America. It's not a struggle taking place with guns and weapons, because they are not occupied in that way, but they're economically occupied, and they're fighting the economic occupation by coming up with a social vision and a social alternative, which is very different to anything else.
If I can slip in one last one, it's about the fall of the American Empire, so I know you'll like it. Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's national security chief, stated that he did not regret funding the Mujahideen in the war against Russia because Moscow, quote, Moscow had to carry out a war unsupportable by the government, a conflict that brought about the eventual breakup of the Soviet Empire. And in Iraq and Afghanistan today, is the U.S. caught in a similar trap?
I think it is caught in a similar trap, but do not have any illusions that this is going to bring down the American Empire. The American Empire will only be brought down when what happens outside the United States impacts inside that country. It's that combination which will do it. That's how all empires are brought down from time immemorial. And at the moment, there is no sign of it. So one shouldn't sort of breed false optimism. We've got to be very hard-headed and realistic. It's going to be a long haul.
Thank you very much, Tarek Ali.
Lisa, Tarek.